You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 25th of October 2021 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, I want to begin today by following up on the news story that we were talking about last week with the Labour MP that had threatened to throw acid in a love rival's face. Something which you won't hear about in the mainstream news. All you'll hear about in the mainstream news is about the terrible behaviour of the great British public and the low level of debate that is going on in social media. And I was pointing out last week that the example that is actually being set by some of these MPs leaves rather a lot to be desired. Well, as I say, there's been a follow-up to this news story. A former Labour MP facing jail for threatening to throw acid over a suspected love rival reportedly told her supporters, "I am a black woman in a white court." And the reason why she was saying this is that she fears that she will be discriminated against. And this is an MP that thinks she is going to be discriminated against in a court because she is black. Judges and magistrates have been told that they have to get down the numbers of black people that are in prison. So they're told that when they have a black person in the dock, especially a young black person, they are supposed to bear in mind that that person may have experienced racism at some point in their life, and therefore, if there is any way that they can avoid a jail sentence, they should do. So far from being discriminated against because she is black, they're actually more likely to be more lenient on her because she is black. But in actual fact, well, what would it be like if she was actually to be judged by a black judge? And I think this would be better for people all around. I think we're far better off living amongst our own people rather than living within multiculturalism. If she was going to a court and there was a black judge there, she would not be able to claim that she feared being discriminated against. It would mean that the black judge would understand what it was like to be a black person. They might understand a little bit more about the emotions that black people feel. It does look from statistics as if they have a little less control over their emotions than other races might have, and the black judge might be sympathetic because of that. They would understand what it was like to be that ethnicity. I mean, how can you imagine to be what it is like to be another ethnicity to the one that you are? I mean, it's just an impossibility, isn't it? We only understand what it is like to actually be ourselves. And I don't believe we really have a right to judge other ethnicities by our own standards and by our own behavior, because we are not that ethnicity. It's rather like a cat trying to imagine what it is like to be a dog, or judging a dog by the standards of a cat. I mean, it just seems a little bit nonsensical to me that we do this, and then we get surprised when people claim that they're being discriminated against or they don't understand things. And as I pointed out last week, a lot of black people, when they are in court and when there is a lot of evidence against them, they will still plead not guilty, even knowing that when they are found guilty, they're going to get a much harsher prison sentence. And that may well be what happens here. She may get a prison sentence and then she will claim she was being discriminated against. But in actual fact, it will be because she pleaded not guilty when there was so much evidence against her. And again, this is one of the ways that white people and black people differ in the way that we present ourselves in court. Leicester East MP Claudia Webb, who has been suspended from the Labour Party and is now an independent, was convicted earlier this month of harassment against suspected love rival Michelle Merritt. The court heard she had threatened to throw acid and sent naked photographs and videos of Miss Merritt to her family. Miss Webb, 56, will be sentenced on November 4th, but was warned she could face prison. But in a message apparently sent to her supporters before the verdict, the MP, who denied the harassment claims, said, "I am a black woman in a white court facing a white system and white prosecutors. I have been deliberately targeted because I am vulnerable." This is an MP, and she thinks that she is vulnerable. And she, what she sees going on here is that she's facing a white system with white prosecutors, and yet she's a member of parliament. She's been brought into that system. She is a part of that system, and yet she still sees herself as opposed to that system. She's looking at things from the point of view of ethnicity. And of course, we're told we're wrong as white people to look at things through the viewpoint of our ethnicity. We're told when we do that, that we must be horrible people, we must be white supremacists, and we must hate everybody else. But of course, we don't hate everyone else. And it doesn't matter how many times people are told, oh, you're actually a part of this country, you're part of this nation because you live in this country. They know that what actually defines them is their ancestors. What really defines them is who they come from, not where they are. It's who they come from that matters. And this is what she is showing here. She is showing that her loyalties are to her people, her loyalties are to her ethnicity. And she instinctively feels that because she is not being judged by her own ethnicity, she is not going to get a fair trial. And that is because ethnicity is central to everything. That is why she has these instincts. And I'm sympathetic to that. I can understand why that would be. But she, of course, blames this on racism. She claims that she doesn't think she's going to get a fair trial because she believes that white people are racist. And of course, we're not racist. Our system is certainly not racist. It bends over backwards to try to do whatever it can for black people and for non-whites. And yet the more that we actually do for them, the more we get accused of being racists. And they keep doing polls and people say that there's never been so much racism as there is today. But if you think about the sort of things that used to be on the television, you used to hear language on the television that you would never hear today. Just racially charged language or racial slurs used to be very common on the television. And you don't hear anything like that today. And yet we're still told that racism continues increasing. Of course, the only real way to get rid of racism is to just have the communities living separately. And I don't see what is so wrong with that. What is so horrific about having to live with your own people? It's going to be the most beneficial way to live. And it avoids all these sorts of problems where it doesn't really matter what happens. She is going to see herself as being picked on by white people for doing this, even though that's a pretty ridiculous assertion to make. I mean, what is she saying? Is she saying that there are white politicians that have been threatening to throw acid in their love rivals' faces and the police are just ignoring these white politicians that have done that and they've just gone after her? I think what she is saying is that that wasn't really what she was saying. But I mean, it seems pretty obvious when she says that somebody should be acid, that she was threatening to throw acid at them. Her excuse was that it was a courtesy call to let this love rival know that we're supposed to be in lockdown and she should have been wearing a mask or something. But that doesn't really sound similar to "you should be acid" now, does it? She continued, "I know firsthand the sexism and racism institutions and media use to vilify black women. And again, this is the opposite of the truth. She is a Labour Party MP, or she was a Labour Party MP. They must have put her on a shortlist in order to get her into that position, which shows that they were not being sexist and they were not being racist. They were doing the opposite. They were giving her a leg up. They were putting her on a diversity quota or affirmative action and ensuring that the voters in that constituency didn't have anybody else that they could vote for. They were told, we know you're going to vote Labour and we're going to put this woman of colour in place for you to vote for, because they wanted to have more diversity in the Labour Party. So it's actually the opposite of this. It doesn't matter what we do for people of colour, they will always feel as if we are being racist against them. So the simple solution to that is just to separate. We never had this concept of racism 150 years ago. We never even had it 100 years ago. It's a very recent concept, and it can only exist in multicultural countries, which is why we are against multiculturalism. And finally, Miss Webb, she plans to appeal against her conviction, but she declined to comment on these comments that she had actually made last week. So we will continue to follow that news story anyway and see what happens. And the next news story here is about an organization called Black History Walks. When Black History Walks decided to take its tour of London to the Thames in the form of a cruise, the idea was meant to be a one-off to help raise money for heritage plaques celebrating the lives of key figures in black history. However, the runaway success of the first trip from Temple Pier to Greenwich, which sold out, meant they decided to continue the cruise alongside their usual program of tours, talks, and films in the capital. So the very fact that this sells out within Britain really sort of shows that the British people aren't racist, that they're keen to learn about these things, they're keen to learn about these key figures in black history. The 6-mile round trip on a double-decker boat includes discussions about how London's landmarks link to key parts of black British history, with special historical guests played by people in costume. Well, there really isn't that much British history that concerns black people, though, is there? Because there really weren't that many black people in Britain until after the Second World War. Britain was 99.9% white up until that period. There were some black people around at the time of Queen Elizabeth I, not very many though, probably numbered in the hundreds, and she removed them basically, she removed them out of the country, and that was on the wishes of the British people, and that's really the only records that we actually have of black people being in Britain. So black British history is going to be pretty sparse, I would have thought. I wouldn't have thought they would be able to find many people that they could actually include in this. I mean, obviously, black world history, maybe there's a bit more, but there really isn't much in black British history. And this is the criticism that I have of it, is that they insert people into British history and then claim that they were black. And that's what they've done here. Michelle Assantewar plays the role of Yar An Santawar, a Ghanaian warrior queen who led a war against British colonialism in the West African country at the end of the 1800s. So how is that a part of British history? The British went to war against this person. They were the enemy. So why is it that they're being presented as being a hero? And it doesn't add up, does it? British history should be portraying the British people as the good people. I mean, that it's his story, isn't it? It should be the British people's story. And yet, because we're now trying to include all these other ethnicities as if they are British as well, what they're actually doing here is presenting the British as being bad people. And colonialism in Africa was all about civilizing the African people and building cities there and building infrastructure there and teaching them how to extract their own resources from the ground and how to modify them so that they could produce products and then trade with the rest of the world, with a view to once they were able to do that, then they would stop trading in African slaves. The motive behind colonialism in Africa was to stop slavery. And all you have to do is look at the history of David Livingstone to find that out. David Livingstone, the great anti-slavery campaigner, that was his vision. If we could only link up these places in Africa with railroads, if we could just teach them how to start making other products, then we could get them to stop selling one another as slaves and get them to sell these products instead. So the whole idea, really, of colonialism in Africa was to put a stop to this horrible trade in slaves. At any time, the Africans could have got together and said, well, we're not going to sell one another anymore. It's not like the British were going over there and hunting down Africans, putting them on boats and then taking them to America. The British were going over there with goods that had been made in Africa, and the African chiefs were saying, we want some of those goods. We want those things that you have there. And the traders were saying, well, what have you got to offer us in exchange for them? And the African chiefs said, well, we have these hardworking slaves here. Why don't you take some of these hardworking slaves? They work very hard, and all you have to do is make sure they're well fed and put a roof over their heads. And that was basically it. It wasn't that white people went there hunting them. And this Ghanaian warrior queen, it says that she led a war against British colonialism. She wouldn't have been going to war against the British to try and stop slavery or anything like that. She would have been heavily involved in this slavery. And the Africans didn't want slavery to stop. That would have been why they were against British colonialism, because it meant that slavery would stop. And they said that they will never stop selling slaves. They saw it as a great status in order to actually own slaves. In fact, it was the hardest job involved with stopping slavery was actually stopping the Africans from doing it. And the country of Mauritania, I believe, slavery was still legal there just up to 20 years ago. In Libya now, the failed state of Libya, which only failed because we bombed the hell out of it, they now have slave markets there again. And it was the hardest struggle to get Africans to actually stop this. And the African chiefs, they didn't want to stop it. And this Ghanaian warrior queen, I dare say that she was very pro-slavery, especially if she was against British colonialism. She says, and that's this actress, Michelle Asantewaa, that since a summer of Black Lives Matter protests last year, which led to more conversations about Britain's past, the cruise has become exponentially busier. The tour takes in thousands of years of Black British history. Well, where is this Black British history if they weren't here until after the Second World War? That's not thousands of years of history, is it? That's 70 years worth of history. But it says here it dates right back to the Roman ages. So where do Black Africans fit into Roman times? Well, we know that in Britain we had North Africans when the Romans were here. And of course, people today who are mostly historically illiterate automatically assume that that means that there were Black Africans in the country. But in actual fact, North Africans were white. It was the Phoenician civilization. It was Carthage, the Punic Wars, Hannibal, who went over the Alps and made war against the Romans. They were the ones that were in North Africa at first. And then the Vandals went into North Africa, the Germanic tribe, and they took over from the Romans. And the king of the Vandals actually came to Britain, and he went to Ireland, and he fought against the Saxons, and he smashed the Saxons, and then he went back into France, and he smashed a lot of France up as well. And this king of the Vandals, he's referred to in our ancient British chronicle as an African king. So, of course, people who are historically illiterate today will look at that and think that it must mean that the king was black. But of course he wasn't. He was a Vandal. He was part of these Germanic tribes. So it's a sleight of hand, basically, that they have done here. Because today, North Africa has black people in it, people assume that 2,000 years ago, North Africa also had black people in it, but it didn't. Because black people, their correct taxonomy is the sub-Saharan Negro. And sub-Saharan means that they were under the Sahara. They couldn't get above the Sahara. They couldn't get to North Africa. So they just didn't exist in North Africa at this time. But we do have these references to these Africans. So that's where this idea comes from, that they dated back to the Roman ages. It's false. They also cover topics like black Spitfire pilots. Black Spitfire pilots, I guess what they're probably talking about here is mixed race Spitfire pilots, because if they actually had black Africans, then their average IQ would have been about 70 IQ, 80 IQ, and you have to be incredibly intelligent to be a Spitfire pilot. So I would make a guess here that what they're talking about there is mixed race Spitfire pilots. They talk about the colour bar in nursing, and this will go back to Florence Nightingale. And she started nursing. We actually did a programme on this in Greatest Britons. And I believe there was a woman called Mary Seacole. And again, she was mixed race and she was from Barbados. And she wanted to open an inn that looked after soldiers that were convalescing, basically, from the Crimean War. And she wanted to open this inn as a business. And Florence Nightingale said, well, we can't really have anything to do with your business because it has alcohol there, and we worry about some of the things that we've heard that go on there. So this wasn't a colour bar. This was Florence Nightingale saying, well, you're not a nurse. You haven't studied nursing. And what you actually have is an establishment that sells alcohol and allows people to stay there. And of course, if you're going to be selling alcohol somewhere, people are going to be getting rowdy. They don't serve you with alcohol in the hospital, do they? So that's probably what they're referring to there. So there wasn't a colour bar. I'm sure if Mary Seacole had actually studied in Florence Nightingale's nursing school, that she would have been taken on. And then they say, to the Black People's Day of Action, which took place after the New Cross fire that claimed the lives of 13 young black people. And again, that would have been within the last 70 years. So that will probably be accurate, although I expect it claims white people were to blame in some way. Miss Asantewaa says her favourite part of the tour is putting parts of history she feels has been overlooked in the limelight. Other figures commemorated on the trip, and remember, this is supposed to be about British history, British black history. Other figures commemorated on the trip include the author Phyllis Wheatley, who is an author who lived in America, who was mixed race, the abolitionist Olaudah Equiano, and I looked him up, and apparently he lived in England for less than 20 years, near the end of his life, and this was after buying his freedom in America. And again, he was mixed race. So how is that really a part of British history that somebody moves to England and lives there just before they die? And the reason why he moved to England is because in England, we never had any laws about slavery. We didn't have slaves in England. So if black people could get to England, they were free men. But this Olaudah Equiano, he was a free man anyway, because he had bought his freedom. And once he did, he came to Britain and he became a part of the movement to abolish slavery. And I believe he was used as an envoy by the British government at some point, or an investigator into this. But he just lived in England for 20 years. It's not a part of British history. There was also a Queen Queen Aminarinas that they have on this cruise as well, who is thought to have ruled the kingdom of Kush, which is now Sudan, from 40 BC to 10 BC. Now, Diodorus Siculus wrote about the kingdom of Cush in 50 BC. And he talks about a people that were exactly the same as the Greeks, a civilized people that worshipped the gods, that understood how to read and write and wore clothes and were exactly the same as the rest of the Oikoumene, the Greek-speaking civilized world at the time. And he also talks about some other tribes that lived in Cush. And these other tribes had a dark skin, they had woolly hair. He talks about them having features that only black people have. And when he was talking about the civilized people that were there, he doesn't actually give a physical description. He just describes them as being just like the Greeks. And then he describes this other people that are living there. And it's quite clear from his description that he is talking about black people, but there's no way on earth the people that he is talking about would have been able to raise an army and fight against the Romans and then create a stele about it. They weren't capable of reading and writing, quite obviously, from Diodorus Siculus' example of it. And this Queen Aminerinus, apparently that's what she did. She fought a war against the Romans, and then there was this big stele that was actually written about her. And Cush is not in Sudan either. Cush is Ethiopia. So again, what we actually have here is we have somebody white living in Africa, and because they were living in Africa, black historians today will try and claim that the person was black. I mean, that's where their logic comes from, basically. They just assume that because Africa has black people in these areas today, they must have had black people in those areas for 2,000 years. It's rather like looking at the population of the city of Detroit today and then claiming that Henry Ford was black because Detroit is full of black people today. It's very disingenuous what they're doing, but because most people are historically illiterate, they don't pick up on this. Nicole Rachel Moore, who plays Queen Aminerinus, said she hopes black British simply becomes British history. So she wants this sort of thing to be taught in schools, these sort of falsehoods. Now, it may be that she doesn't know that these are falsehoods, and she probably doesn't know that they are. She probably thinks that black people have been living in all these countries for thousands of years and that they did fight against the Romans and that Carthage was full of black people. She probably does sincerely believe this, but it isn't true. And it's very easy to prove that it isn't true. All you have to do is look this history up. A lot of it is on Wikipedia. You can look up this Queen Aminerinus on Wikipedia and you can see that she fought against the Romans. And then you can look up Diodorus Siculus' histories. I believe it is volume 3 or chapter 3 on the kingdom of Cush. And it makes it very clear that the people that were in the kingdom of Cush were white. But there were also these other tribes that were there. And that's what it calls them, other tribes. And it says that they are as far away from human kindness as it is possible to get. It doesn't mention them being up to a standard of civilization that they can actually go to war against the Romans. Nicole Rachel Moore continues, when we talk about Black History Month, it's totally well and good to celebrate it, but we're still celebrating it, she says. I feel that we have to recalibrate the mindset a bit. We're here, we've been here for a long time, for at least 2 millennia. And that is just not true. They've been here since the Windrush, about 70 years ago. That's how long that they've been here for. That's how long we've actually had multiculturalism in Britain. And what has multiculturalism brought us? Multiculturalism has brought us conflicts of interest between the groups living in the country. It means that the country is pulling itself in different directions. It means that one group want to do things one way and another group want to do things another way. And all the while we are divided like that, we are incapable of putting up any resistance to it. We're incapable of putting up any resistance to the policies that our government have put in place that are actually harmful to the British people. So it's a bit of a vicious circle, really. The more diversity there is, the more conflicts of interests there are and that arise that have negative effects. But the more diversity there is, the harder it is for the people that are having these negative effects on them to unite around their ethnicity because they're being divided, and a divided house will not stand against itself. And really, it was our elites that thought this would be a good idea, and somehow we allowed our elites to become separated from the rest of the group. We allowed a divide to get in there. And now the elites are increasing that divide by encouraging all this diversity. And you can't blame black people for going along with it. You can't blame people for taking us up on an invitation to come into our country. And you can't expect them to not advocate for things that are going to benefit them. But we can talk about these things. We should be able to talk about these things. And we should be able to unite as white people around our ethnicity to try and provide some resistance to this, to try and provide some pushback against this falsification of our history. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.